I was mentioning to Professor Peter Jones early in the morning that after Paul's introduction, there is nothing else for the speaker but to disappoint you, because his introductions are such a great. So there's going to be a change in plans, and I have to explain it with a joke, which I like very much. So let's start with that joke. Instead of finishing with a joke, I'm going to make a change. The joke is about Einstein, but the no connotation. I'm going to make it with Stan Osher, that is closer to us. So some of you might know that recently Stan Osher got an honorary degree at Kashan. So the joke goes like this. Stan Osher goes to Paris to give a few talks, and they hire a driver for him just to drive him around because he gets lost in Paris, and that's very dangerous for Paris. Anyway, so he goes to Kashan with his driver. He gives his great talk, and he's asked a couple of questions, and he answers no problem, as we expect the questions. Then he goes to Paris 6, and he gives the same talk, and he's asked exactly the same questions, and of course gives exactly the same answers, because he's not a probability person, so his answers are deterministic. And then he keeps going to universities. Is the time, let's say, to go to École Normale Supérieure Doon, and then on the way, the driver say, you know, Professor Osher, your life is very simple. You give always the same talk. You're always asked the same questions. He always gives the same answer. It's just very simple life. So Professor Osher, who, as we all know, is very modest, says to the driver, you know what? Nobody has ever seen me at that university, so you're going to be Professor Osher. I'm going to be your driver. And you give my talk, and let's see what happens, because you say my life is so easy, which is, it is. Our life is very easy as professors. So the driver goes and gives the talk, flawless, perfect talk. He gets the same two questions, perfect answers, absolutely no problem. But here's the surprise, comes a new question. So the driver is asked this new question, and he's starting to sweat. He's very nervous because he realizes life is not so easy. But he's actually very smart, so he realized the answer. And he said, you know what, Professor? Referring to the person that asked the question. You should be ashamed of your question. It is so trivial, I'm going to let my driver answer. So I'm the driver, and this is joint work with Michael Hofer, that was supposed to be in my group from the group of Helmut Potmar. And Julian Kao, who is sitting here in the first row, who is actually the professor and the driver. So I prepared the talk, and we were very lucky that she's here. So I thought that if it's okay with everybody, I want her to give the talk. And since I'm the driver and she's the professor, and I think it's very nice. So Julian spent 2 years in Minnesota, embedded in a hospital, at the VA hospital, which I think is a great experience for a mathematician, not just to work with radiologists. She actually sat there for 2 years. I don't know if she was happy about that, but that was the truth. She basically was there almost every day. So she learned a lot of neuroscience just by spending the whole day with these people. And I think it would be, I hope she just moved recently to the Ohio State University, and since I hope that we're going to hear a lot from her work in neuroscience, if it's okay with everybody, I want her to give the talk. Since I asked, I'm sure nobody's going to oppose. But
what about her?
What? Oh, she already opposed. But you know, there is that doesn't count. She opposed until 5 minutes ago. She kept opposing, but it didn't work. So I'm going to still sit here, but I really think it's a great opportunity for her, for you to know her and for her to know you. So I hope it's everybody will understand my chutzpah by imposing this on you. But I think it's good for her and for you. And she's a great speaker. So now it's your turn. I'm blaming. This was the fastest talk on the workshop. I want everybody to learn. I finish in time.
I don't know whether I I'm a good speaker, but I really wish Michael Hofer is here so I can give you another surprise that he can specifically give the talk. But anyway, he's in Vienna, so he couldn't come. Okay, so I just give the talk. So today I'm going to talk about discovering the network of so-called fungi in human brains, and this is joint work with Michael Hofer, Indiana University of Technology, and Guillermo Shapiro, sitting there in EC Department, University of Minnesota, and Josh Dan and David Rontenberg in VA Medical Center. So let me give you the outline of my talk. First, I would like to introduce you what is so-called fungi, because I think most of you already know, but some of you may not know. So to make sure we are on the same page, so I would like to give you an introduction to so-called fungi first. And later I'll tell you about the motives, some of the motivations. As Monica mentioned, some of the motivation for extracting the so-called fungi, and I will briefly go through them again. And I will also talk about some previous approach to extract the so-called fungi, and then talk about our geometrical method to extract them. And at the end, I'll give you the conclusion. So what are so-called fungi? So when viewed from the outside, the human brain appear as a highly wrinkled surface with lots of numerous crevice regions. So the south side, which is plural of sulcus, are those crevice regions of the convoluted surface. And the so-called fundi, which is plural of fundus, are 3D curved lying in the depths of the human brain. So I'm actually trying to show you some so-called fundi here. And the color on the curve is actually shallow in blue and deep in red. So you can see that these parts are deep in the human brain, and these are close to the surface, and close to the top of the cortical surface. And the black one here actually indicating the cutting point of the right figure. And if you're looking at one of the so-called fundi, you can think it's actually a 3D curve. Penetrate this figure by passing through one of its deepest points. So that's our so-called fundi. And our goal is try to use numerical method to extract those curves. So what's the motivation to extract the salsa and so-called fundi? You already know that actually the folding pattern vary a lot from person to person. But however, the folding pattern is not arbitrary. And somehow people already can recognize some of the major salsa and so-called fundus, and it is usually used to refer the brain locations. And also the important thing is when you compare different brains, you can use those so-called curves to be a reference in order to walk one brain to another and to do further either longitudinal or cross-sectional studies. So these are the reason we want to try to extract the so-called fundi. And now I would want to give you some overview about the previous methods. So of course, previous method already always start from the manual extractions. People try to look into the image and try to extract it by hand. And later, people proposed the curvature-based method and also distance-based method. And later, people combine curvature and distance-based approaches too. So that's look at how people do it by manual extraction. So usually, what people do is you get a brain image, and you try to display it by a graphic user interface, which can display three different view of the brain. You can have axial view, or corner view, or sagittal view of the brain. And what people do is, for example, if you look at the sagittal brain, you can see this is white matter, and the dark gray region are gray matter, and this the black region is the CSF region. And what people do is you just try to mark points in the deep part of the so-called regions. And they actually mark across different planes, okay? And then you can get, you know, the central sulcus or other sulcus, etc. But however, the process, of course, it's extremely tedious, right, and time-consuming. Even you ask a person to mark twice, they may mark differently because the moon is not right and the weather is not right, so it happens. So we would like to have automatic extraction, and usually for experts, radiologists, it actually takes one day. For manually mark, like 6 fungi per hemisphere. So let me show you the result they marked. So usually these are the 6 major fungi they mark. So you can see the central one, and precentral, superior, olfactorial, temporal, and calcarine sulcus. And you can see that usually because they actually mark in slice, okay? So you can actually see that the breaker here, it's actually break, okay? Which is according to the central one. And it always happens, you know, in several different fungus because they mark in slice. It's impossible to get them connected unless you view it from a 3D view and try to mark it on a 3D viewer. So this is a result obtained by the manual extraction, and we want to introduce automatic extraction such that it can actually give you the curve representation instead of just give you, you know, like a segment of curve which represent the same sulcus. And we usually use the manual extraction as a golden standard to be compared with our automatic extraction. So here I show you a result of our automatic extraction without mentioning how to extract it yet. So the important thing of automatic extraction is, of course, you can not only improve the quality and the reproducibility of the process, but also you can save a lot of time. But the most important thing is you can actually process a large data set of MRI data such that you can do comparison between people.
Sorry, what color represents it?
Oh, the color, the blue is in shallow, and the red is actually very deep in the brain. Yeah. So let's look at previous curvature based approach. I only mentioned some of the approaches, so if I need any references, please let me know. So previous approaches, what people do is you try to extract the surface first from the given image data. So you extract the white matter, gray matter boundary. Okay, this is actually the portion of the surface. And what you do is you compute the mean curvature on the surface. Of course, there are several different techniques to compute the mean curvature. Some people use discrete approach, you know, just compute on the triangular surface, or you can actually do local fitting by a spline surface and then try to compute the derivative, etc., in order to extract the mean curvature. But usually people compute the mean curvature, and the color here indicate the curvature, okay? And the red one indicate you have very small mean curvature, and the green part is actually higher curvature regions.
What do you start with?
Pardon?
What do you start with?
Oh, start with. Yeah, I haven't mentioned it yet. So usually in the past, what people do is they actually manually mark 2 points.
No. What the actual data?
Oh, what's the
MRI data.
Oh, the MRI data is T1. Yeah, it's T1 image. And then how people extract the surface. Actually,
so it's a bunch
they
of
have
slices?
Yeah, it's just 3D MRI. For example, it's like 180 times 256 3D. Data, and each pixel you have intensity. It depends on whether it's 16 bit or it's.
So it's not biased towards any particular plane.
I know.
So
people can actually extract the surface by using different public software such as SurfRelax or FreeServer or Collapse. A lot of them. Yeah. If you want to know more, we can discuss. Yes. And then, so people extract the surface and then compute the mean curvature on the surface. And then what they do is they try to mark 2 points and then try to look for curve, which actually passing through the lower curvature regions, mean curvature regions. So this is how people do it. And then I just write down several references here. You have the Batasaghi and the memory. The difference between the algorithm is one is done on the triangulated surface, and one is done on the implicit representation, so like the level set representation of the surface. So this is usually how people do it. And actually, there are different, I actually should put this in the previous page, I'm sorry. I actually want to mention Miller's work too, that their group also designed the automatic algorithm to extract the fungus curve by given some endpoints and using dynamic programming. approach. And here, this is the distance approach. So how people extract those curves by distance-based approach. But the distance-based approach usually is you give an image, like a brain image, and what they do is they try to find out exterior. Here I write exterior, so we can say it's exterior hole. It's some kind of exterior hole which wrap the brain tightly, but it's not a convex hole because you know the brain is not convex. It's even you have exterior surface, it's not necessary to be convex. And after they found this exterior hole, the previous approach is you try to find a medial surface, which is actually defined. You can have you know, if you are on the medial, one point on the medial surface, you can actually find the equal distance to the boundary of the CSF region and the gray matter regions. So after you identify those medial surface, this is just 2D cross-section. You can see this 3D view. So one of this medial surface is corresponding to one of the medial surface here in 3D. And how people find the so-called fundus, because it's actually lying in the depth part of the brain, right? So they actually find the inferior portion of these medial surfaces. So these are how they find the medial surfaces. So usually from the inferior margin of these surfaces, and these are proposed by different groups. And also, people have combined a curvature and distance space approach. The idea is sometimes they believe curvature can give exact information, but sometimes the distance may give you a better representation too. So somehow they get a combination between those. These are actually proposed by Jerry Prince's group. So if you are interested, you can look at the paper. So these are the all the previous, well, part of the previous approach. But idea is people actually argue with each other whether you use curvature or whether you use distance. But to my own experience, I found out that actually distance can give a more robust result. The reason is because if you consider a surface and you just perturb the surface by small little bump or something, then the curvature can actually change a lot. But however, the distance won't change too much. So that's why we want to believe the computation based on the distance approach. So that talk about our algorithm. So our algorithm, you start from an MRI image. And what I want to tell you is we actually, our approach consists of several different processes. So the first process is you try to find the exterior hole surface, like the blue one I show you here, to wrap the brain. Okay. After you wrap the brain, then I can talk about which point on the cortical surface is considered to be deep. Okay. And the way I define it is deep or not, it's actually try to compute the geodesic distance to the outer hole I define. Okay. And this is actually the picture I show you. The color are the depth information. And then I'll tell you the detail in one moment. And this is just the final result. So basically, we have several different processes. The first thing is you do segmentation and surface extraction. And after you get the surface, so you get the surface from this image, and then what you do is you do outer hole extraction. So you get a blue outer surface, like a draw here, and then you compute the geodesic depth information for every point on the cortical surface. And by using that, we are aiming at extracting those curves, which actually pass through the deepest region of the brain. And the output of our result is actually 3D point lines. And so that's start from the beginning first. So how you do the segmentation is you get an MI volume, so which is 1 millimeter, the isotropic voxels, and it is actually acquired in the Montreal Neuroimage Institute, and the data is provided by Dr. Allens. And usually what people do is, in order to make sure the extraction is very stable, usually what people do is they take out the skull first, by using the brand extraction tool. And after they do that, they do the segmentation by using some of the public software. I actually list one of the references here. So the result will actually give you a 3D triangulated represented cortical surface. So as indicated by the blue lines here. And then I just tell you that we want to compute the outer hole, right? In the outer hole approach, we actually use the implicit approach. So I would like to tell you a little bit about the implicit representation. So usually for implicit representation, the difference between explicit and implicit is explicit you use the parameterized boundary. So for example, if you want to represent a circle, and then you can use x equals to cosine t, y equals to sine t, etc. Or you can 3D sphere, you can use this formulation to represent it. But however, you can also use implicit representation. And for implicit representation, you actually represent the boundary as a zero level set, such as this figure. You actually, for represent a circle, you actually use phi equals to square root x squared plus y squared minus 1 to represent it. And then when you want a circle, you just set it equals to 0, then you get a circle. And in the discrete case, then for explicit representation, for 2D, of course, you use light segment. 3D, you use triangulated mesh. And implicit, you actually have values on the rectangular grids. So this is actually the representation. And we just talk about the brand, right? So I just give you some flavor, because brand, for brand, we have half medium triangles. It's impossible for me to draw the triangles for you. But you can see the mushroom like this. This is a triangulated mushroom. And you can have distance map. So this are distance to the surface of the mushroom. And from this, you can actually reconstruct it by setting the distance equals to 0, then you can reconstruct the mushroom. And same for brand, you can have phi equals to 0 is a brand. Phi equals to negative 5 is inside the brand, 5 millimeter. It's phi equals to 5 is outside of brand, 5 millimeter. And now we want to talk about how we move the surface. Because the way we extract the outer hole is actually by actively move the surface in order to extract the outer hole. So the idea is, in the Lagrangian formulation, you give specified velocity. You have dx dt equals to v. And for the implicit representation, we just say that the implicit representation, we actually embedded the boundary as a zero level set, right? So it's V equals to 0. And then you can actually just, by chain rule, take derivative with respect to t. By chain rule, you end up with two terms. And you can further decompose the velocity into the tangential direction and the normal directions. And since gradient V is in the normal direction, so dot with tangential direction velocity will be 0. So you end up with a level set evolution equations, which is proposed by Ocean Sensei in 1988. So in this way, you can actually move the boundary easily, and it can also handle the topological change. So let's look at how we get our outer hole. So here, I just give you a demo of the brain surface, even though this is a very simple like a curve in 2D. And then what you do is actually very easy. You can just set phi equals to 0 as the red curve. And then you move out the surface by constant speed 1 up to t. And then you move in by a negative 1 velocity up to 2t. And after you do that, actually you will be able to obtain the outer hole. And the t we actually choose to be 10 millimeter. The reason we choose 10 millimeter is because the so-called width is usually less than 10 millimeter. If you grow 10 millimeter, then usually it's able to close the so-called regions, such that you actually end up with the outer hole regions. Okay? So it's like this. I do it once again. You go out and then you move in, and you will get a outer surface. And then after you get this outer surface, you can actually do the simulation in 3D. So if you do the simulation in 3D, you will end up with this kind of surface, which does not go into the so-called regions. And this is the cross-section view of the outer hole we extract. So now after we extract the outer hole, we have the outer hole right now, right? And actually we want to go to the deep part of the brain, right? So the way we extract that is by defining the depth measurement, okay? So now how we define the depth measurement, in the previous approach, they don't use geodesic in the CSF region. In the past, the first thing people consider is the Euclidean distance. So if you think about Euclidean distance, you basically just measure every point on the, let's say this is the cortical surface to the outer hole, which we represent as a red curve, and you just measure the Euclidean distance directly. So you will think that C is actually not deep at all. But we actually want to consider how the brain folds and how it convolutes. So in the past, another method is actually proposed for the geodesic distance on the mesh. So it basically, you follow the surface to the outside. So if you use that, then C, if you follow the surface to the outside, then C will be deeper than the B and B and BBA, okay? But the way we propose the depth measurement is we actually want to consider its folding pattern, and we define it's actually the geodesic distance from any point on the cortical surface to the outer hole we define. So you actually want to compute the shortest distance from any point in the cortical surface here or there, and then you see what is the shortest path in the CSF region and then to the outer hole. Okay, so the new geodesic depth measurement will give you actually C is the deepest point in the brain, and B is the median point, and A and D roughly have the same depths. So the idea to compute this is actually not too difficult, because we just say that we have an implicit representation of the surface, which is the blue line, and we actually compute the outer hole, right? And the outer hole is represented by the red curve. Okay, so what you want to do is you actually just, for every point in the so-called region, you just compute the distance to the red curve, basically. And this can be done easily, either by the fast matching method, or you can do it by fast sweeping method. And then what you do is you lay down the grid in the local regions, and then you compute for every point on the rectangular grid to the red curve. And then you can actually do bilinear interpolation to interpolate to the curve. Or you, in 3D, you just do trilinear interpolation. So you will end up with this picture. And this actually, these are 3D slides and tells you that the red part is actually deep in the brain. And the blue part is actually very shallow. And this is the 3D view of the brain of one of the cross sections. So after we get this, how can we extract the deep region? So now we want to go to the deep region. How you extract the deep region is we actually take out the triangles, which actually less than 2.5 millimeter. So we basically define the so-called regions are the triangles, which actually has more than 2.5 depths. Okay. So after you take out those, you will be able to label the connectivity of these subregions, because basically after you take out, it won't connect anymore. Some of them will still connect, but some of them will be separated to different regions. So you can do label algorithm and try to extract different portion of the so-called regions. So if you do the labeling, you will end up with around like 50 components in the brains. Then after that, for each of the region, okay, for each of the region, what you do is, instead of manually marking two endpoints, we actually use an algorithm to extract the endpoints. So these are one of the region in the previous slides. Like you can think about just this part, okay, and then you extract it. You get this, and how we define these endpoints, it's actually not very difficult. What you do is you look for all the barycenter of these triangles. Okay, if you plot it, it's like this, indicated by the red. The every point here is actually a triangle here. Okay, so you actually get the very center of those triangles. And what you do is for every point, you actually search for its neighborhood. And by searching its neighborhood, you can do the principal components analysis and identify the directionality. After you define the directionality, you can actually see whether it's an endpoint or not by checking whether there are points lying on two different directions.
So you expect not to lie at the end of high curvature portions?
Pardon?
So these endpoints tend not to lie where you have high curvature.
No. It's actually the place we cut it off. We cut it off by 2.5 threshold, right? 2.5 millimeter threshold. And you get it, actually these points are usually in at this, like this place, this place, this place, and the curve end at here, but it follow the surface to the deep part and it just go along the deep part. Is it clear?
These are endpoints.
Right, but it never happens that you have a curve. Yeah.
No, but they're not necessarily at they're not necessarily at the high curvature. So you cannot use curvature to
Yeah, it's not necessary to
I guess
okay. Yes.
We'll go on.
Yes, yes, we can discuss that. Okay, so you can actually locate these endpoints by looking at the principal component analysis locally near the point and check whether it actually has points lying in two different directions. So after you identify this, and then you can do a thinning algorithm. The thinning algorithm is in the next page. So what we do is, because every triangle, we actually have a depth information. And you can start to throw away the triangles by the depths it has. So we throw away the triangle which has less depths. So you can look at the right pictures. It's actually, you try to throw away the triangle which has less depths, and it will just keep eating down. And then at the end, you will end up with curve which lie on the depth regions. And you can actually further, try to slightly modify this curve by looking for the minimum spanning tree of this curve, and you will be able to actually identify either you want the longest tree of the curve or you actually want the whole branches. So you can do that. And this just tells you in the thinning algorithm process, if we found this point is last deep, this triangle is last deep, but because of the topology, we actually, during the thinning process, we preserve the topology. So we will actually keep this one in order to make everything still connected. Yeah. So these are the results. We have the automatic extracted one. You can process on many different brands, and this is the result compared with the automatic one and also the hand mark one. So you can see that the hand mark one, it's actually the curve actually break into several different parts. For the automatic extracted one, you can have a connected curve. And then see.
So it never gets snagged on the way down?
Pardon?
It never gets snagged on the way down?
No.
I imagine a little thing coming up to me and I get a false.
Oh, it's possible you have several branches, yes. But if you have faults, unless you have something like this, but if you have some like a mountain like this, right?
Uh-huh.
And the curve may go around this part or go around this. So it actually depends on whether you preserve the topology or not. Yes, you can get different curve structure, yeah. That's right. So these are the red, the black dots are marked by radiologists, and this curve are actually extracted by our automatic algorithm. And you can see that in this region, the black dot are missing. The reason is actually black dot is actually follow slice by slice, and then you just miss some of the places. As you can see, I show you the slice. It's actually very hard to mark them because when you mark central sulcus, you always have encountered this situation. They actually break into the sagittal view. And radiologists always try to mark two points in order to try to make them connect, but it's still impossible. And this one, as I show you, this part is also the radiology miss the place. But this place is somehow, the surface extraction algorithm does not well represent the surface in order to match up with the radiologist mark. Yeah. But however, our algorithm, it doesn't affect our algorithm because this is due to the surface extraction level. So let me just go quickly about the comparisons. And we actually do comparison. These are comparison with the labeled data, and this is average point radiologist mark, and like a standard deviation. And this is the distance between the average distance between the HEMAR data and the automatic extracted data. And you can see actually they are small because it's only 1 millimeter. And these are the average mean, that percentage rate that is within 2 millimeters. Okay? If you want to know more, you can read the paper. So let me conclude my talk because I think I went too long. And so of course experts only agree on the nomenclature of the major source site, and people still try to, you know, identify the tertiary and secondary source sites. And since it vary a lot, we need to actually design algorithm to fast classify them. And also automatic labeling of the so-called is difficult because it's not just according to the geometric point of view you can identify them. You actually need to include some functionality of the brain. And we also want to do that further to apply to the surface working based on the extracted so-called fundus. And this is the conclusion. So thank you so much.